Well, as Dustin Hoffman said in the famous movie Rain Man, Ted Kluszewski, 298, which was the batting average on his baseball card. And I couldn't pass that up because that ties to what we're going to discuss about this important topic of the clash of styles in the 59 World Series. So we're going to start by talking about, before we get to the statistics, the preface to this is in the book by Charles Billington about the 59 series, the last one in Comiskey. He talked about the ownership fight between Vec and Comiskey. You've heard a lot about Vec today. And the owner, Grace Comiskey, had died in 1956 and left majority ownership to her daughter, Dorothy Rigney, rather than 31-year-old Charles Comiskey II, who had been running the team. After 2 years of squabbling, Mrs. Rigney sold to Bill Vec. Chuck filed numerous lawsuits and lost them all, and that's a background to what we're going to talk about today, the ownership fight between Vec and Chuck Comiskey. Vec had evidently said Chuck had grown up firmly convinced that the divine order of the universe called for the earth to spin on its axis, the sun to rise in the east, and Charles Comiskey II to preside over the White Sox. Vec had the idea to depreciate the player's assets, but the IRS said that he could not do that unless he owned 80% of the team. Chuck refused to sell, costing the team $2 million in taxes. And eventually, in 1961, Vec sold his shares to Arthur Allen Jr. Now, having mentioned that important preface, we now get into these important statistics, and Barry and I put together not only some statistics, but also a lot of images, such as what you see there, Fox and Aparicio, the middle of the White Sox infield on the cover of Sports Illustrated. So, when we talk about some of the statistics as to why the White Sox won in 59 in a pitcher's park, where they had strong pitching and they stole a lot of bases. Some of you might remember the Go-Go White Sox, and hopefully we'll hear from you about that later. Now, in terms of these slides, we note the runs scored, runs allowed differential. But now, please note in this slide here, what we highlighted was the White Sox record in one-run games. And so we're going to see, we're presenting to you today all sorts of stats about why the Sox were that good. It was basically a two-team race in the American League, the Sox and the Indians. My Yankees were pretty bad. That's a story for another day. So the one-run differential, we think, was very crucial to the White Sox success. Now, moving along to the offensive side of it, you can see that other teams scored a lot more runs than the White Sox did. They lacked power, but you can see that looking at the runs scored, runs allowed differential, you might think that the Indians should have won, but it didn't work out that way. And thankfully, the Pythagorean relationship that you might have figured Cleveland would have won didn't work out that way. Okay, let us continue. Now, in terms of the pitching strength, these were the four teams in the first division of the American League in 1959. And just behind the Tigers were the Orioles and Red Sox, and as usual, Kansas City and Washington were at the bottom of the league. So we emphasize the White Sox pitching strength, the best ERA in the American League, and then you can see that Cleveland, their closest pursuer, wasn't as good as people might have thought. Okay, now, On the offensive side, then going on to our next slide, then you can see that whereas the White Sox weren't as strong as other teams well ahead of them, that you can see that that was counterbalanced by other factors. Now, in terms of the offense, then what we can point to is catcher Sherm Lahler, or Shoim as we might say in Brooklyn, led the way with 22 home runs, followed by Al Smith with 17. No one else was in double figures. However, the go-go part of the White Sox appeared as Louis Aparicio stole 56 bases, Landis stole another 20, who also was excellent defensively in center field. Aparicio scored all of 98 runs, followed by Fox with 84. And then in midseason, the Sox picked up our friend Ted Klazuski of 298 fame and Larry Doby. And it also should be mentioned that in the buildup of the seasons prior to 59, younger players were in the pipeline, such as Norm Cash, Johnny Romano, and also Johnny Callison. And then also, Bill Veeck in July of 59 was quoted as saying, "Whoever thought that a team could win a pennant strictly on pitching, defense, and speed on the bases? Certainly I didn't. And then this is contrary to everything I've learned about baseball." After the series, a local joke was that the White Sox would change the name to the White Nylons because nylons get more runs. I'm glad I didn't say that. And when the Sox clinched, the Chicago Fire Commissioner decided to turn on the city's air raid sirens to celebrate, thus scaring the populace. Veeck was saying, "If you were a White Sox fan, as some of you in this room clearly are, like RJ for instance, then you had to figure that it was just your luck that the bomb would be dropped right after the White Sox won the pennant." So that's the White Sox side of things, and now Barry's up at the plate.
Okay, we turn our attention to the Los Angeles Dodgers, who had to survive a playoff with the powerful Milwaukee Braves in order to get to the World Series. Here we see some numbers about them bums. They finished 88-68 after sweeping the Braves in the playoffs. The Giants won only 83 games. So let's compare this to the 59 Braves, led by Spahn, Aaron, and Matthews. So how did LA get there? The Braves were not as good in one-run games, and were also below 500 on the road. The Giants featured Mays, McCovey, and Cepeda. However, six Dodgers belted 10 or more home runs, in contrast to the White Sox, led by Hodges with 25 and Duke with 23, both veterans of the Ebbets Field days. Charlie Neal led with 30 doubles, and he and Wally Moon each had 11 triples. Neal, Gilliam, and Moon stole bases in double figures. On the pitching side, the Dodgers' team ERA was 3.79, third behind the Giants and Braves. Drysdale went 17-13 with a 3.46 ERA. Roger Craig was 11-5 with a sparkling 2.06 ERA. Padres, hero of the Brooklyn World Series win in 55, went 14-9, however, his ERA was 4.11. The best pitcher in the pen was Larry Sherry, who was 7-2 with an earned run average of 2.19. In the 59 World Series, won by the Dodgers in six games, they out-homered the Sox 7-4, stole five bases in six attempts, and Pale Bowles only stole two bases in five attempts. Although the Sox relied on speed, base running cost them game two. Trailing 4-2 in the bottom of the eighth, Al Smith doubled with Torgerson on second and lead-footed Sherm Lahler on first. Third base coach Cuccinello waved Lahler home, and Lahler was out easily. And that cost them the game. The Dodgers compiled a 3.23 ERA over the six games, compared to 2.46 by the White Sox. The LA Coliseum proved to be a tough place for the Sox to play. Even though they won game five, they could not win game six back home and couldn't force a game seven. Larry Sherry was the World Series hero, two wins, two saves. Ted Kluszewski hammered three home runs and 10 RBI in a losing cause, while Charlie Neal and Chuck Esegian each drilled two home runs for the winners. Oddly, Esegian only hit one home run during the regular season. After the series, Vec said, "We got licked by the one thing we didn't have in common, power."
Back again, everybody. So you can see the comparison and contrast, hopefully, between the White Sox and the Dodgers in 59. Now, what we're going to start to turn to was, how the situation for both teams changed after the 59 series. Whereas the White Sox traded away a lot of the young players, Cash, Callison, Honey Romano, who had a lot of success with other teams. They brought back Minnie Minoso, who had previously been there. Minoso had the misfortune to be on Cleveland when Chicago was winning, and on Chicago when Cleveland was winning. And so later on, they brought in Roy Sievers and other sluggers, so they transformed themselves into more of a power hitting team, which Barry will talk about a little later. Now, the Dodgers, going later on into Dodger Stadium, which as you know is a strong pitcher's park, led to the development of Koufax and Drysdale, two of the aces of the 60s. Maury Wills developed as a base stealer, and although the Dodgers had some power, that you'll see a little while statistically how there was a complete reversal from the Dodgers being mostly power-oriented in the 50s to becoming, in effect, the go-go Dodgers of the 60s. And I'd like to mention before we move on that Al Lopez, who managed the Indians to the 54 pennant, was also managing the 59 White Sox. And he had a pretty strong coaching staff, Don Gutteridge, Tony Cuccinello, and Ray Berries, who is considered a very good pitching coach. And then the Dodgers with Walter Alston stayed on, and now we go back to Barry with more on this.
We conclude by examining this turnaround in playing styles in a few short years by 1963. For the White Sox, Peters led the 63 staff, going 19-8. Pizarro was 16-8, and Wilhelm had 21 saves. Ward and Nicholson each had 22 home runs. The Sox drilled 114 home runs in 63, but stole only 64 bases, kind of the flipping the switch on what those statistics had been in 59. Their staff ERA was 2.97 in a pitcher's park. For Los Angeles, Koufax in 63 was 25-5 with 11 shutouts. Drysdale was 19-7. Baranowski 16-3 with 21 saves. Wills stole 40 bases, followed by Willie Davis with 25 and Gilliam with 19. They were a running team. Hondo Howard belted 28 home runs, followed by Tommy Davis with 16 and Fairley with 12. Dan Bounce hit 110 homers but stole 124 bases. The Dodgers, in a favorable pitcher's park, had a staff ERA of 2.85. So the White Sox roster turned over substantially from 59, as they were no longer the go-go Sox. The Dodgers still had some strong holdovers from 59, with the influx of good contributions from young players. Now, this kind of sums up what we're talking about. The 59 White Sox scored 669 runs. The last pennant winner, to do that previously, you have to go back to World War II, the 45 Tigers. They hit 250, again, the last first place team with a batting average that low, you have to go back to the dead ball era, the Red Sox of 1918. Sox slugged 364. Again, the Tigers were the previous team to do that in 45. 97 home runs, the last team with as few, that won a championship, the 48 Braves. And the Sox had 113 steals, the last first place team to do that, the Dodgers in 49 with Jackie Robinson. Now, if you go forward from 1959, who was the next team to perform like this? Take a wild guess. The Sox, the next leader with as few runs, the 63 Dodgers. The next team that won a championship batting under 250, the 65 Dodgers. The next team with such a low slugging percentage, the 63 Dodgers. The next championship team with fewer home runs, the Dodgers in 65 had only 78 home runs. By contrast, if you look at today's statistics, only three teams have fewer than 78 home runs, and we're just past the middle of the season. I don't think any team is going to finish with lower than 100, and certainly not a championship team. And then 113 steals, the next team to do that and win the pennant, the 63 Dodgers. So the 63 Dodgers had effectively switched places with the 59 White Sox, picking up the go-go style of play. So therefore, we have the reversal of playing styles in four short years, from 1959 to 1963. We have time for questions. Where'd that microphone end up? Oh, there it is. Yeah, Dave. Good to see you.
Good to see you. I was in high school in 1959, and our teacher, as a little incentive reward, let us listen to the World Series, because I grew up in Los Angeles. And that first game, in contrast to what you're saying, it was a blowout for the White Sox, I think.
11-0, Kozuski hit two home runs. Yeah.
So for that one afternoon, I was good for the White Sox fans, bad for the people in Los Angeles, and a reversal of roles.
At least you got out of some classes.
Anybody heard of Chuck Kosygin? Anybody have his baseball cards?
Yeah, I've heard Chuck Kosygin. In fact, I have that World Series card.
Good. Hold on to it.
Speaking of Kosygin, were those either or both of those home runs pinch hit home runs in the World Series?
Yes.
And has anyone else ever had two pinch hit home runs in the World Series?
Yes, that's right.
Ask and you shall receive.
So from your research, let's say in 63 the White Sox won the pennant and the Yankees didn't. Which team do you think matched up better with the Dodgers? The 59 White Sox, the 59 Dodgers, or the 63 White Sox, the 63 Dodgers? Basically, who do you think they would have matched up better than the 59 series?
Well, the White Sox did have good seasons in 63 and 64. They no longer had the speed, but Gary Peters was very good. Joel Horland was in the pipeline. But of course, the mid-60s Dodgers had all that pitching. And the White Sox chased the Yankees down the stretch in those seasons. So I think the White Sox could have held their own, but in a different sort of way from the 59 team. I like that type of question, sort of hypothetical, what if something had happened. But what do you all think about that? I like the question.
By the way, I would like to reference Go-Go to Glory, edited by Don Zemenda, a very good detailed coverage of the 59 season. Really very well done.
Yeah, you mentioned Wally Moon, and can you talk a little bit about the Moon shot, and how did he adjust when the Dodgers left the Coliseum as a power hitter? I mean, they got him to do those Moon shots over the screen, but when they left the Coliseum, what was his, did he still have the power?
I don't have his stats in front of me, but nobody hits a lot of home runs in Dodger Stadium. So it's there's a lot of heavy air over that park at night, and the ball does not carry well. And obviously the left field power alley is a little more normal in Chavez Ravine.
Yeah, in the LA Coliseum, Moon was able to slice to left field as a left-handed batter, whereas people like Duke Snider, who were used to pulling in the cozy confines of Ebbets, had deep distances in the LA Coliseum. So I don't know if that answers your question. It's a good one about what would Moon have done. It's worthy of further research. Thank you.
As a younger White Sox fan who was definitely not alive in 1959, I know neither of you are White Sox fans, but before 2005, like, I never really heard a lot about the 59 White Sox growing up. And I'm kind of wondering, from a non-White Sox fan perspective, I don't know what sort of internal political things there might be for this, but why do you think the 59 White Sox aren't talked about more? Is it because they didn't have any, like, stars, per se, or kind of feels like they're forgotten even in Chicago, I guess? I don't know. I just wonder if you have any thoughts.
I don't know. I hear about them. And they certainly have stars. Nelly Fox, Louis Aparicio are in the Hall of Fame. Dick Donovan and Billy Pierce are outstanding pitchers throughout the 50s. I think you just grew up at a time when there were other things to talk about, like Dick Allen and so on, and the other players we heard about earlier today. So yeah, if you were alive then, you remember it.
If I may add to what Barry just said, it could be also that, that I'd like to hear from maybe the White Sox fans in here. Were they considered like a one-time wonder, even though, as we talked about, the 63-64 White Sox were also pretty good, but maybe they were overshadowed by the Yankees, who were in the series in those days just about every year. And also, and the 59 White Sox had early Wynn, who went 22-10, won the Cy Young Award. A young Bob Shaw went 18-6. And here's a couple of names. I know RJ knows this, and probably Richard Smiley, too. Jerry Staley and Turk Lown in the bullpen with 15 saves each. And when I get back to teaching this fall, I'm going to see if my students back home know who these people are. By the way, I hope you all saved your baseball cards, because mine got tossed when we moved and I've been recollecting.
Yeah, another thing about 59, the Yankees were winners from 55 to 58, 60 to 64. The Yankees team in 59 stumbled out of the gate and never really recovered. It was a fluke year for New York, and that opened the gate for Cleveland and Chicago, who had been runners-up before and after the 59 season.
All right, thanks, everybody.
Thank you.